Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. We want to acknowledge Saturday's horrific shooting in Buffalo, New York. 10 people were killed and 3 were wounded. All 10 victims were Black, according to officials. According to a document written by the 18-year-old white shooter, he researched a zip code with a high percentage of Black residents. We will discuss this tomorrow and Wednesday. Today, we are going to continue with our One Planet series by talking about the plastic pollution and climate crisis. Last month, California became the first state in the country to launch an investigation into fossil fuel and petrochemical companies, including ExxonMobil, for their role in causing and exacerbating the global plastics pollution crisis. According to California Attorney General Rob Bonta, in the 1950s, the world produced approximately 1.5 million tons of plastic annually. 1.5 million tons of plastic annually. Today, that number has skyrocketed to more than 300 million tons, a nearly 20,000% rise with no end in sight unless we take collective action. The Attorney General said for more than half a century, the plastics industry has engaged in an aggressive campaign to deceive the public, perpetuating a myth that recycling can solve the plastics crisis. The truth is, the vast majority of plastic cannot and is not being recycled. Only 5 to 6% of plastic is recycled. This is according to the latest report from the Last Beach Cleanup and Beyond Plastics. The groups also revealed that while plastics recycling is on the decline, the generation of plastic waste per person has increased by 263% since 1980, from 60 pounds a person to 218 pounds a person. Joining us to discuss this are two guests. Judith Enck is visiting professor at Bennington College and the president of Beyond Plastics, an organization that works to end plastic pollution by being a catalyst for change at every level of our society. Judith Enck is former EPA regional administrator appointed by President Obama. Hi, Judith. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks, Rose. I appreciate your continued focus on this issue.
Well, we appreciate your really great work on this issue. Thank you so much. Amy Westervelt is an award-winning climate journalist and host of Drilled, a true crime podcast investigating the obstacles to action on climate change. Amy Westervelt has written extensively about fossil fuel campaigns that mislead and delay meaningful action on the climate crisis. Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, on Friday, we covered the three-part Frontline series about the oil and gas industry. There was a focus on how ExxonMobil and Koch Industries has spent millions to mislead the public about the harmful effects of fossil fuels. They knew as early as the late 70s, thanks to their own scientists, that burning fossil fuels would warm the planet with catastrophic consequences. And the same is true about plastic recycling. And that's one of the issues that California Attorney General Rob Bonta mentioned as one of the reasons for investigating this industry. Judith, let's start with you. What is the significance of this move by the California Attorney General?
Well, it's as if the fossil fuel industry and the plastics industry are working out of the same playbook, because they are. And they are often the very same industry because plastics are made from fossil fuels and chemicals. I think the California Attorney General investigation is very significant and probably has ExxonMobil and plastic manufacturers shaking in their boots, and they should be, because they know that they have lied to the public for decades. Just like on climate change issues, the petrochemical companies have told the public, don't worry about the mountain of trash being produced by plastic packaging year after year. Just toss it into your recycling bin. Well, we know that putting plastics into your recycling bin is not the solution because, as our report documented, only about 5 to 6% of plastics actually get recycled. And I want to start by saying we have to keep recycling. I'm a big supporter of recycling. Recycle paper, cardboard, metal, glass. But when it comes to plastic, only put number one and number two plastic. It's that little chasing arrow under at the bottom of the container. Only put number one and two in your recycling bin. And we have to acknowledge that plastic recycling has been an abysmal failure. It's never gotten to double digits. It's never gotten to even 10% recycling. So I think the Attorney General's investigation is warranted. He's going to focus on whether or not companies that caused the plastic pollution problem purposefully misled the public. I think the answer is obvious, but let him do his investigation. And then he needs to determine if these actions violated the law. So he kicked this off on April 28th with a subpoena to ExxonMobil, seeking information on their role in deceiving the public. And people need to know that ExxonMobil is one of the largest producers of plastic polymers in the world.
Well, Judith, we will talk a little later in the show about what you think people should still do, because I'm sure everybody listening put out some plastic for in their bin last week. And obviously, we have no idea what happens after that, after it's taken. And so what should we continue to do? And then also, I think it'd be interesting, because I was just putting some extra, you know, dishwashing soap. It ran out. I was looking at the soap in my bathroom. I'm trying to use more bars. I mean, just obviously we know that we need a lot more than individual action, but it is really important, especially given that so few plastic is recycled. So what should we really look for? Let's talk about that later in the show. Amy, on this particular issue, what are your thoughts about what California is doing? How significant do you think this is?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I agree with Judith, and am a huge supporter and admirer of Judith's work. I like always call her when I'm working on stories about this. So I'm excited to be on here with her. But yeah, I agree. It's a huge deal. It's kind of surprising to me actually that plastic has not been a focus of some of the other big climate liability and climate fraud cases. And I think that it's pretty likely that it will expand beyond ExxonMobil. They're, you know, a big and powerful member of the American Chemistry Council, which is the trade group that lobbies against any kind of regulatory action on plastic. And their response to this investigation was to trumpet the possibility of yet another big recycling myth, which is the new and magical advanced recycling or chemical recycling that both Exxon and the American Chemistry Council have been promoting for a few years now, which is basically just, you know, heating up plastic to turn it into either a low-grade fossil fuel or a feedstock for more plastic. So, you know, it's not, doesn't really strike me as a big climate solution. And there again, similar to sort of the regular old mechanical plastic recycling, advanced recyclers have had a lot of the same issues where they're having a hard time, you know, commingling different types of plastic. They're, none of them have really been able to operate at any kind of significant scale. So, so I think it's interesting that the Attorney General is looking at, you know, past decades. And when I asked him if he'd look at what they're doing now as well, he said absolutely that yes, he will be looking into, you know, how this is kind of an ongoing practice of really using recycling as a way to encourage people to not worry about plastic.
Amy, you wrote about this in The Guardian, and ExxonMobil responded with yet another lie about plastics, what you just mentioned, advanced recycling technology, a fancy new name for burning plastics that is intended to distract attention from the severity of the crisis and delay the adoption of solutions. Can you talk about that? What is, quote, advanced recycling?
Yeah, it's either heating up plastic to turn it into kind of a low-grade fossil fuel, or to use various chemical processes to change it into a feedstock for plastic. And it's, you know, it's emissions intensive as a process in and of itself. So the idea that it's some kind of environmental solution is pretty ridiculous. And then, you know, it hasn't really been successful. There's 37 or 40 of these. Judith probably has the latest data worldwide. And very few of them are operating as intended. None of them have posted anything close to big numbers on recycling plastic. And in the US, these facilities are mostly getting big exemptions from environmental regulations. So it just seems like more of the same from this industry. It's just, you know, sort of in new packaging.
Judith, what would you add? And can you talk more about the disinformation campaign that they have successfully put out over the decades?
Sure. Yeah. So Amy's absolutely right. I mean, and it's a little stunning that the answer to, you know, mechanical recycling, as we know it, traditional recycling has not worked. So now the big comeback from this multi-billion dollar industry is let's try chemical recycling. And as Amy said, it's just heating up plastics. The technology, they've been trying it for decades. There are only 7 facilities in the entire country. It doesn't work because there are thousands of different types of plastics. They all have different toxic additives, different colorants. And so the best they can do is produce a little bit of low-grade fossil fuel. And in one instance, a very small amount of new polystyrene. That's like the last thing we need in the environment. And so I think it's mostly just a news release for the American Chemistry Council and the plastic producers. It's a false solution. It's not going to solve the problem. The only thing to solve the problem is making less plastic. Mm. And it's in all our interest to do that. Rose, I really appreciated you opening the show with an acknowledgement of the tragedy that took place in Buffalo. I live in upstate New York, many hours from Buffalo, but I'm having a hard time just going back to work on Monday morning after that tragedy. And I want to point out that systemic racism is also part of the plastic pollution problem, because plastics are manufactured in low-income communities of color in Louisiana, Texas, Appalachia. There's a part of Louisiana that's actually called Cancer Alley, which it hurts my heart every time I say that. And it has that name because there's a concentration of plastic production and petrochemical facilities along a 70-mile stretch of the Mississippi River, and then, not surprisingly, very high cancer rates. So we are asking people in those communities to shoulder that burden simply because companies are using cheap plastic. I think there are a lot of retailers that don't want to purposely damage the earth, but they package things in plastics because it's cheap. And also because they too have believed the lies. And I use that word, you know, on purpose. They've believed the lies from the plastics industry that you don't have to worry about all of this plastic. You can just recycle it. Well, Americans support recycling, as we should. But plastic recycling has never worked, will never work, because of the way plastics are made. And we already have alternatives to plastics. And then continuing on this environmental justice point, if you cannot recycle plastic, which is the case over 90% of the time, that means it either is littered in the environment and potentially becomes a huge problem in the ocean, or it's sent to incinerators or a landfill. Most incinerators and landfills in this country are located in low-income communities of color, making asthma cases worse, making exposure to air toxins worse, And so the life cycle of plastic is a life cycle of environmental racism. And I would argue that if these plastic production factories or these landfills or incinerators were located in more affluent communities or whiter communities, they would not be getting away with what they're getting away with today.
Judith, I'm so glad you brought this up because we've had Sharon Levine, the president of Rise St. James, on the show several times to talk about how they are fighting this $9.4 billion chemical plant, Formosa, from the Taiwanese industrial giant. And it's just so important. They're fighting right now. I mean, they just successfully fought a $1.2 billion plastics manufacturing plant in 2019. Do you have any updates on this $9.4 billion Formosa plant?
Yes. And I so admire Sharon Levine and thrilled you've had her on your show. Sharon's a retired special ed teacher, as you know, who is, as you know, as a volunteer, really standing up for her community. There's a little bit of good news on her battling two ethane cracker facilities that Formosa wants to build in St. James Parish. The Trump administration was just greenlighting the proposal like they have all over the country. The Biden administration put the brakes on this, but put it in neutral and wisely said that there had to be a full environmental review of the project. Kind of stunning that that wasn't required before. And the review is being done by the Army Corps of Engineers. My old agency, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, will need to be involved as well and should look very closely at the air permits and the water permits. And so the organization, Rise St. James, has gotten, I would say, an interim victory because they just want a hard look at this facility. And if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the president and vice president, are really committed to environmental justice, they will see that there are already cumulative effects from all of the other pollution sources in that region of Louisiana. So how could they possibly allow these facilities to get all the necessary permits? Not to get too wonky here, but a lot of the regulatory decisions will actually be made by the state of Louisiana, not federal agencies. So Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards has already let the people of St. James Parish down by actively supporting this project. So it's really going to be up to the Biden-Harris administration to step in and protect this community from further environmental damage. And I think that environmental review will probably wrap up sometime next year.
Amy, and we'll stay on this story and have Sharon back. Amy, you've done a lot of writing and talking about environmental racism. And Judith makes such a good point that if these petrochemical plants were in, you know, high income areas, this would not be allowed. I mean, we've heard Sharon just talk about what it's like to drive in this area with all of these plants surrounding you, and there's just so much toxin in the air. Can you just give us an update? Because a lot of environmental justice advocates said that this issue was addressed in Build Back Better. Obviously, sadly, that did not pass, and we're not even sure what's happening with it at this point. But what about the administration on these issues? Because he also put, I believe it was a task force of environmental justice advocates to sit at the table to bring these issues up. Do we have any updates on this?
There's one tiny good update and then some bad news, I'm afraid to say. You know, the good thing is that the Department of Justice has now also tapped some folks to look into specifically environmental racism and environmental justice, which I think is a good sign that, you know, there's a realization that there are actually prosecutable crimes happening here, that this idea that we've just sort of taken for granted of quote unquote sacrifice zones, like, you know, what Judith was saying about Cancer Alley, like it should really turn anyone's stomach that we have a place in this country that everyone just nonchalantly refers to as Cancer Alley. That's disgusting, you know? And I think that Biden's DOJ is starting to look at, okay, what can we do about this? Unfortunately, that's happening at the same time that the Biden administration has completely made a turnaround on natural gas. And I think it's worth noting that, you know, part of why we're seeing a plastics boom in recent years is the fracking boom. So, you know, you're now making plastic out of ethane, which is a byproduct of fracking. And because of the sort of oversupply of natural gas in the past, and because of the decline in use in transportation and buildings, the petrochemical industry, which, yes, is part of the fossil fuel industry, has turned to plastics in a big way. So I think that as we see Biden making a deal with the European Union to supply, you know, Europe with American gas from now till 2030, I'm really worried about what happens when, you know, the use in transportation and buildings in Europe declines. And we see more of this kind of petrochemical build out. So I don't think this issue is going away. I don't think the Biden administration has done nearly enough to address it. And I think it's something to really keep an eye on in the years ahead.
Amy Westervelt is an award-winning climate journalist and host of Drilled, a true crime podcast investigating the obstacles to action on climate change. Judith Ank is visiting professor at Bennington College and the president of Beyond Plastics. They recently found that only 5-6% of plastic is recycled. Judith Ank is former EPA regional administrator appointed by President Obama. And if you'd like to join us, we're talking about the plastic pollution crisis and also the climate crisis. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Or you can tweet us. We're at Your Call Radio. Amy, we just realized we have not done a show about fracking in a while. What is the state of fracking? Is it now on the rise in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah, it's booming again, unfortunately. I just spoke with someone out in the Permian Basin, which is the most productive basin in the U.S., and they said they haven't seen this many rigs going up since like the old, you know, initial boom days. So unfortunately, after, you know, really being on the ropes for a couple of years there, where you know, multiple states and counties and cities were passing gas bans, and the market for gas was down, they have been given a lifeline by the Biden administration. And they are, they're booming right now.
There was a piece in The Guardian called U.S. Fracking Boom Could Tip World to Edge of Climate Disaster. 140 billion metric tons of planet heating gases could be unleashed if fossil fuel extraction plans get the green light. This is according to an analysis shared with The Guardian by the Energy Policy Journal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I think there's a few things to keep in mind here. There's the current boom. There's also the fact that what we're discovering with, you know, it seems like more studies every month, is that methane emissions from fracking have been grossly underreported. So there's way more than what has previously been reported. I think people forget that fracking is also used to get at oil, at petroleum. So there is a carbon component to it as well, not just methane. And it is a total, it's a climate disaster. I don't understand what the administration is thinking, kind of greenlighting things that are, you know, 3, 5, 10 years out for supposedly a short-term solution to gas prices. And the Russia-Ukraine invasion, it's really, I don't know, to me, it's a really clear indicator of just how captured the government is by the fossil fuel industry.
Well, a few things we learned in that Frontline three-part series, The Power of Big Oil. Right after Hurricane Katrina, Wall Street began pumping billions into companies with fracking operations. A lot of people thought oil and gas in the U.S. was over, but that obviously was not the case. And then in 2010, ExxonMobil purchased the fracking company XTO for $41 billion. And overnight, it became the country's largest natural gas producer. One of the men who was instrumental in discovering fracking was in the film and then basically said that he regretted what he did. And you can find that story. We aired it on Friday, but be sure to watch the three-part series when you have time, because there's so much good information in it. That is Amy Westervelt, an award-winning climate journalist. We're also joined by Judith Enck, president of Beyond Plastics. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are discussing the plastic pollution crisis. And thanks to today's great guests, we're also getting updates on things like fracking, petrochemical companies. There's just so much going on. And we're just so glad that we have these great guests and we actually have an hour to talk about this. If you'd like to join us, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you have any questions specifically about plastic, what is happening with the Attorney General, Rob Bonta, in California, who has decided to investigate petrochemical companies like ExxonMobil for their role in exacerbating the plastic crisis. We were also just talking about what's happening with fracking. You can give us a call or email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also tweet at yourcallradio. Judith, it seems like... Well, given that you do so much great work at all levels of government, there's social movements happening around these issues, and then using the law to take on companies like ExxonMobil that are just so massive, to learn that ExxonMobil bought that company I just mentioned before the break, XTO, for $41 billion. So it's got its hands into so many different major industries. What could come of California Attorney General Rob Bonta investigating companies like ExxonMobil?
Well, I think Attorney General Bonta's investigation is so important because, for one thing, he can pull the curtain back and let the public know about these decades of deceptive advertising. And on one hand, let's just get everyone informed that we cannot recycle our way out of the plastic pollution problem. We have to reduce the use of plastics, and that should inform public policy. And then second, ExxonMobil and their partners in lying should be held accountable. They should pay huge fines and penalties. I mean, they won't be... You know, environmental statutes do not allow for fines and penalties to be high enough to actually make this other than a cost of doing business for these companies. But maybe, just maybe, they can also come clean on the fact that chemical recycling, advanced recycling, which is really pyrolysis, gasification, plastic heating, as Amy described, is not the solution. I don't expect these companies to change on their own, but I do expect an investigation like this to get members of the state legislature, city council, Congress better informed on solutions, because the public is there. I mean, I've worked on climate change for years. I highly recommend Amy's podcast, Drilled. You learn a lot about the climate crisis from Drilled. I've met many climate deniers. I've never met a plastic pollution denier, because the evidence is everywhere. It's the plastic bag in the tree. It's the plastic Coke bottle in the park. Plastic pollution is all around. In fact, my son, recently, I was hiking with him and I kept pointing out all the plastic pollution on the trail. And he begged me to just stop talking about plastic when we're on this nature trail, revealing how self-aware I am not. But it's everywhere. And once it's loose in the environment, it's hard to get back. Most plastic in the ocean comes from the land. So it's a beach or it's a city street, a plastic bag, a plastic soda bottle gets littered. It rains, it goes into the storm drain, it goes into a river, it goes into the ocean. Most of the plastic in the ocean falls to the seafloor. It's not bopping around in the giant island on the surface. Most of it goes to the seafloor. And scientists tell us within the next decade, for every 3 pounds of plastic, for every 3 pounds of fish in the ocean, there'll be 1 pound of plastic. Mm. So we're essentially turning our ocean into a landfill. And I think that's what has motivated Attorney General of California to really take action. In his announcement, he also mentioned this fun little fact that about $500 million in tax dollars is spent every year in California trying to clean up and prevent plastic pollution. So, you know, that is a giant amount that taxpayers should not have to shoulder.
Wow. Amy, when we have Judith on the show, we talk about why the plastic pollution crisis is not part of the wider conversation about climate change and the misinformation campaigns. Do you find that that's changing?
I do think it's changing. I think for a long time, even climate people were kind of bizarrely separating these issues, even though, you know, it is the same companies in many cases producing plastic as, you know, operating in fracking or oil and gas drilling more broadly. And of course, plastic is made from either petroleum or ethane, which is a byproduct of fracking. So of course, this is the same industry we're talking about, but for some reason, it was kind of kept as a separate issue. And I'm starting to see more and more people understand that these are all kind of part and parcel of the same issue. And the thing is, like, the thing that's really important about that is that the companies understand that they're part of the same issue, and they're using some of the same strategies. I was sent a transcript of this former Exxon lobbyist who the folks at Unearthed, which is an investigative project from Greenpeace in the UK, kind of, you know, tricked this guy into thinking he was doing a job interview. I'm sure people saw the video of this circulating a few months ago, but there was a whole piece of it that was about the plastics issue. And in it, he says, you know, yeah, they're talking about banning plastic, meaning, you know, they're government officials like looking into this and people need to get ahead of it. And he says, you know, what we need to do is not fight against regulation, but rather propose a solution and propose ourselves as part of that solution, which you absolutely see in this advanced recycling stuff. And then he specifically says, it's just like we did on climate change. So he, like, I'm reading from this transcript now. He says, so when climate change came, you know, we started to have conversations to say, well, you can't completely change the electric grid. You can't just go straight to wind and solar. And here's why. And with plastic, it's the same conversation. He says, you know, we need to say things like, look, we could do this, but the law is preventing us from doing it. Or we could recycle 100%, but it's technologically infeasible. So this idea of like presenting themselves as part of the solution, but also always, you know, caveating that as we can only do this tiny bit because our hands are tied by either legal or technical obstacles. It's wild to just see him, you know, lay out the same strategy, the same exact playbook from, again, the same company. So I do think, like, I'm starting to see people grasping that, and that is expanding the audience of people who are getting that plastic pollution is a big problem.
The now former Exxon lobbyist Keith McCoy also said that the American Chemistry Council has been working on this issue almost exclusively because federal regulators are talking about banning plastics, and a lot of it has to do with plastics in the ocean and in the waterways. So the American Chemistry Council is working on this almost exclusively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because as McCoy points out in this transcript, you know, it's hard to fight against turtles, which is what they're doing. I think it's important for people to understand, like, they are fighting against the protection of the oceans and against the protection of marine ecosystems and wildlife. And they're couching it as fighting for this magical recycling solution that will never actually work.
Judith, at this point, given this crisis and what we see, like you said, every day when we go out, if you could write a few laws to deal with this, what would you do? I mean, how can we grasp this at this point when it comes to actually making laws or banning things? What are your thoughts?
Well, there's so much we can do, and there's a lot of public interest. So I'm actually optimistic. I mean, if I lived in California, the first thing I would do is start volunteering to help pass the ballot initiative that's going to be on the California ballot in November, which would reduce plastic packaging by 25%, put a penny fee on every piece of plastic packaging, plow that money into waste reduction and recycling programs, obviously not plastic recycling. It's all packaging. And then also finally adopt a polystyrene food packaging ban in California. That will very likely be on the ballot. People need to do more than just show up and vote in November. They need to volunteer now in their community to pass it. Also, the plastics industry never gives up. So California has a plastic bag ban, but they messed it up and allowed for thicker plastic bags. So for instance, in New York, there is a plastic bag ban, thankfully, because 23 billion plastic bags are used every year by stores in New York. It's now banned. So when you go to the supermarket, virtually everyone brings reusable bags, and then some big spenders spend a nickel per bag on paper bags. In California, they've got to fix the law to prohibit thicker plastic bags. The industry plays this game and say, well, these thicker bags can be reused 125 times, but I've seen those bags and most are not reused. Also in California, the legislature and Governor Newsom need to fix the container deposit law known as the bottle bill, mandatory deposit on beverage containers. It is the wackiest bottle bill in the country because it makes it so hard for consumers. In most other bottle bill states, you pay your nickel deposit, you drink your beverage, and you bring it back to the store, and you get your nickel back. It's that simple. California has a network of redemption centers and unclaimed deposit money, and deposit money goes to the waste haulers for some crazy reason. So, you know, these are legislative fixes. And then there is a bill at the federal level, the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act, sponsored by Assembly, the House member from California, Alan Lowenthal, and Senator Merkley of Oregon. That's a federal bill that the American Chemistry Council and others are fighting so hard because, for one thing, it would establish a 3-year moratorium on handing out permits for new or expanded plastic production facilities like the Formosa facility in Louisiana. It would also establish a national bottle bill, a national ban on plastic bags done right, provisions like that. So my organization, Beyond Plastics, we are a small group of policy wonks. We modestly think we have the policy prescription figured out. We have model bills on our website, beyondplastics.org, including one that can be utilized locally. It deals with polystyrene, plastic bags, and plastic straws. And what I urge a lot of people to do is to jump in locally. Try to pass a good bill at your city council, at the county level. What you will find is no matter how small your community is, when the bill comes up for discussion or a public hearing, the suits from Washington will show up and try to convince. Well, first of all, they announce that they just flew in from Washington, which makes people in the audience giggle. And then for the longest time, they'd say, don't ban polystyrene. Let us work with you to recycle it. And now they're saying, don't ban thicker plastic bags. Let us work with you to burn them at chemical recycling facilities. And I think local governments are getting tired of that greenwashing. And so my organization, Beyond Plastics, has actually just launched a new project where people can start Beyond Plastic groups locally. And we will help them provide educational and technical support. So when the expensive suits from Washington show up, we've got the research done to provide accurate information to rebut that. We're going to win this at the local and state level. There's this amazing disconnect between what the science tells us and what policymakers are willing to do. And that's why individual citizens can jump in and really make a difference.
Judith Enck is visiting professor at Bennington College and president of Beyond Plastics. Amy Westervelt is an award-winning climate journalist. Let's take a couple of callers and then we'll get responses from our guests. Let's go to Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert. Thank you for holding.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the program.
Oh, Robert, can you turn your radio down?
Oh, yeah, sure.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Is that better?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to turn off the... Okay. I just wanted to thank you and your people on the panel. It's obviously almost an more overwhelming issue than many of us can hold on to. So my question really is this. I agree with everything you're saying about controlling the petroleum industry and the producers. What I'm concerned about is how much are we, me, you, the rest of the people, willing to do ourselves to kind of curb or control the amount of money we pour back into it through going on jet planes to places that we all should go, want to go, you need to go, whatever, at the moment. And is there any way we can do anything that would in any way offset or do anything to come sort of modify the consequences of this? I don't see anybody that I know stopping going to the places that they've been waiting to go once the pandemic was over. So to me, that's a dilemma. And the other part of this question is, are we ever going to have a conversation about that dreaded phrase, nuclear energy?
Again? Yes.
So those are my two issues.
Thank you so much, Robert. We will add that nuclear energy topic to our show list. We'll get a response in just a minute. First, let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. First of all, what I don't understand is that although this is an environmental issue, to me, it's just as much a public health issue. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the public health officials have been, because people know that plastic packaging, I mean, if you go shop in a grocery store, everything there is packaged in plastic. Even though you may not want to use that product, you don't have much choice. So the public health people know that the chemicals in plastic leach into the food. It's a huge problem. I have no idea how much cancer is being produced by these plastic containers and plastic packaging. But they've been asleep at the switch. And instead of just looking at this as an environmental issue, looking at it as a public health issue, we're trying to prevent people from getting seriously ill as a result of having to eat food that's been packaged in plastic. So I'm not sure why that hasn't been at the top of their agenda.
Well, thank you for that, Greg. We're going to take one more caller and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Ali in San Francisco. Hi, Ali. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ali.
Hi, Ali.
No problem. The question I have for your guests is that as a worker and a consumer, what I see is two of the largest industries that contribute to single-use plastic waste are hotels and conventions and healthcare. And these are things that are ubiquitous to modern life. But as end users, consumers, how could we raise the red flag that replacements should be provided that are more sustainable, or solutions to these industries, that healthcare and hotels and conventions contribute so much plastic to the single-use plastic stream? Could your guest talk about organizations that propose sustainable replacements, or how we as consumers can say we care and we want something different?
Well, thank you so much for the question. Amy, do you want to first take Robert's question? People are flying again. A lot of people are flying after COVID. I shouldn't say after COVID, but now. What are your thoughts about offsetting, modifying the consequences of this lifestyle that so many of us lead in today's world?
Yeah, this has been kind of a controversial issue, a touchy issue, I don't know, in the climate space for a while, but I don't think it needs to be. I think that actually the most recent IPCC report laid out a pretty good framework for thinking about this. And when I say this, I mean how individual actions and systemic actions kind of intersect around climate. So yes, of course, to the extent possible, people who, you know, have the income level to be able to fly and travel a lot do have a responsibility to think about the impact of that. I think, you know, there was this really staggering data point in that report that the top 10% or so of people wealth-wise, which includes the vast majority of people in the United States, if you're looking at it from a global context, you know, are responsible for an outsized portion of emissions. There's been some really interesting research around how, you know, global elites in particular contribute to this. And there are individual actions that people can take to both, you know, reduce their own contribution to it, but also just to model those lifestyle changes. However, everybody who looks at this stuff always, you know, tacks onto that, you know, one of the biggest individual actions you can take is to push for systemic solutions that take the onus off of individuals to make different choices. Mm-hmm. And especially that set up a system that enables those who do not have disposable income to not be impacted by this issue. So it's both, you know, it's not an either or. There's not really a need for debating about which one is more important. They're both important. And I think, you know, you see this in the plastic issue too. Like, yes, of course, we should all try to use less plastic. However, if we aren't also pushing for a systemic shift in the amount of plastic that's used, then, you know, there are just going to be limits to what those actions can actually deliver.
Yeah, it's a great point. I'm glad you brought this up because we've been wanting to do a show about this, that the world's wealthiest 10% are responsible for about half of global emissions in 2015. And I also was reminded of this piece I heard on Aspen Public Radio a few years ago. 75% of the flights in and out of Aspen are on private jets.
Wow.
So yeah, it's just, we really have to talk because, you know, those of us doing little things, trying to use bars instead of, it's important, but we really also need to look at who's really polluting the most and using these private jets. What about, and we're almost out of time here. So Judith, your overall thoughts, Greg brought up a great point about how this is a public health issue. And then Ali says, you know, looking at hotels, conventions and healthcare and how much plastic is used there.
Yeah, Greg's point is an excellent one. Plastic packaging has toxic additives, and the chemicals can migrate from the packaging into the food. So one thing I want to remind everyone is never put plastic packaging that has food in it into your microwave, please. Health researchers are starting to look at what are plastics doing in our bodies. Recent studies have found plastics in our blood, in our lungs, An Italian study published last year found microplastics in the human placenta on both the maternal side and the fetal side. So a lot of health experts will say, understandably, we don't know what that is doing to us, having microplastics in our bodies. I'm willing to go out on a limb and say it's not doing anything good. So the health issues on both the production and disposal of plastic, but also the use of plastic, are important. On Ali's point, there's a lot that hotels can do. A lot of their meals are served, you know, inside the hotel. So only use reusable, durable dishware. New York adopted a law getting rid of those little plastic bottles for shampoo and soap. And they just now, when the law takes effect in a couple years, there'll be dispensers. You know, in the hotel industry, remember when to save water, there was this practice of, you know, don't get your sheets changed every day, don't wash your towels every day. At first, it's like, oh, that's unusual. And now it's mainstreamed. So we need to mainstream plastic reductions within the hospitality industry. Ali is absolutely right. It's a problem. And then within the healthcare industry, lots of plastics are used. Some of it is needed in healthcare, and you definitely don't see a lot of healthcare stuff littered on the side of the road. It's a harder issue, but we think we really need medical experts to look at how to reduce the use of plastics in healthcare as well.
Before we end, Amy, I just wanted to ask you briefly, we only have about a minute left. You wrote a great piece about fossil fuel ads on podcasts, including the New York Times podcast, The Daily. Similar ads from oil companies have run on NPR podcasts, including Invisibilia and Up First. The American Petroleum Institute has run ads on Ezra Klein's show. On Vox. He's now at the New York Times. Sorry to ask you in such a short amount of time, but what did you find there? We've got about 45 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, the big takeaway there is that podcasts are regulated differently from broadcasts. And so every podcast, you know, company can draw the line wherever they would like. And oil companies figured this out pretty early and put a lot of their big greenwashing claims into podcast ads. When I asked NPR about this, their answer was essentially, it's not illegal, which is not an ethics policy. I think that podcast companies should really be looking at, you know, are we platforming propaganda and misinformation? Whether or not it's legal or not is kind of irrelevant.
Amy Westervelt is an award-winning climate journalist. Judith Enck is president of Beyond Plastics. Thank you both for joining us, and thank you for your work. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.
Tune into Cross Currents today at 5. We'll learn how birds and farmers have formed a partnership when it comes to pest control.
They don't necessarily need a lot of scientific evidence to show that this is working. They're seeing it on the ground.